And we're live, not really, but somewhat. We're here together. And this time we got Mr. J.S. Jabber himself, Dan Shapir. What's up,
hello,
Dan?
Hello, hello, hello. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. And of course, my friend, my sidekick, my co-host, Roman is here. What up, buddy?
Yes, I am here. Great honor to have Dan on.
Thank you very much.
You much truly obliged. Have become Mr. J.S. Jabber in the last, what has it been, 2 years?
3 years coming on. Well, actually, yeah, 3 years. Yeah, it's been an amazing ride. I'm enjoying myself a lot. All my extrovert tendencies are being fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, and you're giving talks also. You've been around. You were just at Web Directions.
Yeah. It's been funny. It's, you know, I was really getting into the groove with giving talks in conferences, and then COVID happened. And in the first 6 months, I was like doing lots of online conferences because I wanted to keep myself in the game. Mm-hmm. And I found out that I really, really hate it. You know, it's talking to a wall. It's not even like a podcast, because in a podcast like this, we have at least, you know, each other and you know, you're speaking with people. So it's a conversation. But when you're giving a remote talk, you're literally just talking to the wall, to your monitor. And, you know, so I did it a couple of times. And then after 6 months, when I saw that COVID wasn't going away, I basically just decided to stop. And I'm now happy to get back to doing live conferences again. So yes, I did JSConf in Budapest last year, and mm-hmm. then finished out the year with Web Directions in Sydney. And now I'm scheduled for IJS in London in April. I was just informed that I was also accepted to React Next.
At least someone.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be, when is it? It's in June, right?
Yeah.
And I have another conference in June, which is JS Nation, which is either in Amsterdam or remote, unknown as yet. Your friend, Mishko, will actually be, I think, in both conferences.
He's everywhere.
He's definitely everywhere, exactly. So yeah, JS Nation will either be in Amsterdam or remote. They've yet to tell me. So hopefully, I'm, you know, crossing my fingers. I really want to visit Amsterdam again. And yeah, I'm looking
great
to
place.
See if I... Sure. And I'm looking to see if I can do one or more additional conferences this year. If I can round up this year with four conferences, I'd be really happy.
Awesome, man.
Tell me, Dan, do you think getting accepted to speak at a conference does it have more to do with like your submission or how well known you are?
It depends, I guess. First of all, I've never been part of a conference, of actually preparing a conference, so like the selection board or committee or whatever. So, you know, I can only speak from the side of the person who gets accepted or rejected. By the way, it's important to say I've also submitted to several other conferences who have not accepted me, and it's part of the game. So the more the merrier, really. If you really want to get into the conference gig, you've got to submit a lot and be prepared for a lot of rejections. Obviously, yep. As time goes by and you know, you get, you know, more noticed in the community, you might say, and, you know, you get your name out, then the likelihood of being accepted or even being invited grows substantially. But still, it's a numbers game. So yeah. That's number one. And number two, I actually propose more than one talk per conference. So I conference organizers the ability to choose or pick the talk that they think would fit best. So really, for every talk that I get accepted, even within that conference, two or three other talks were actually, you know, effectively rejected within that same conference.
Yeah, well, I live on rejection. Like, I put in like five different ideas for React Next. They all got rejected. I think I also got rejected from another conference. I don't remember which. I gave another like four talks. Obviously, I kind of did the same ones. So maybe they're not good ideas. I don't know. Maybe they should
be. Yeah, I'd be happy to review your submission for you. You know, there is an art to it. And you do get kind of, over time, you learn what conference organizers like more, what gets more engagement. So obviously there are topics that are more hot than not. And also, obviously, there's a lot of luck involved because you might be proposing a great talk, but somebody else is proposing a really similar talk to the same conference. And then, you know, it might just be that they've already got that base covered.
Yeah, or you submit a talk about like a library you're really excited about, and then the creator of the library is giving
exactly.
that talk.
Yeah. Exactly. I really had a funny situation. I think we talked about it recently, that I actually, that the talk that I originally submitted to IJS, turns out that Ryan Corniato, the creator of Solid, was actually going to cover the exact same topic in the keynote. And we only found out by accident. We were talking and he was like going like, where are you going to be giving that talk? And I actually had to contact the conference organizers and switch talks so that, you know, to avoid an unfortunate situation. It might have been really uncomfortable to sit in a keynote and like go, oh man, oh shit. Yeah. Can I say shit?
Of course. This is the podcast to curse your heart out.
Okay. So yeah, go, oh shit, you know, here goes my talk. Ryan is an amazing presenter. So anything I might have said, he would probably have covered. And we talked and we were pretty much aligned on the ideas anyway. So I really wouldn't have added any value over his presentation, which would have been really unfortunate. So luckily we found out in advance and I was able to switch talks. But, you know, these things happen.
Yeah, it's good. There's got to be a coin to this, like a word that like when on Twitter, when somebody kind of nags someone to explain something, they call it nerd sniping, or maybe I'm not understanding the term correctly. So now, like when somebody has the same idea for your talk, there has to be some sort of coin.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, it's all good. It turned out for the best.
Yeah. Sorry, Roman. You're about to ask something.
I was just about to say that, you know, maybe Dan, you can help us noobs, how about like give us like, you know, a couple of like tips and tricks on how to get your talk approved.
Selected.
It's a tough one. First of all, let's put things into perspective. I'm not top tier. I'm not like the Ken C. Dodds of the world or the Mishkos. I was speaking with Taz Singh. I don't know if you know him. He's really big in the React Native community. Mm. And he's also founded Guild, which is really an interesting startup having to do with providing funding and support for local communities. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but as an aside, he told me that he intentionally decided not to submit any CFPs for 2023 and consequently is only speaking in 6 conferences. I'm not there. I'm not there yet for sure. If I want to speak somewhere, I've got to submit. I've received a few invitations. I'm starting to get there, but that's definitely not the norm.
So you got to create a framework or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody's doing it. another topic to talk about. Anyway, so basically is, first of all, trying to find all the relevant conferences, that for whatever it is that you want to talk about. So let's say you want to talk about React, you know, go into Google, do React conference, and, you know, start looking for it. So first of all, is to find all the relevant conferences. It can be difficult because some of them, surprisingly, don't really advertise themselves really effectively for CFPs. I know that there are a lot of websites that like collect CFPs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I got one of those.
Yeah. And there are also, I think there are people who collect them on GitHub or whatnot. You can find them if you look for them. So first of all, find all the conferences that can potentially be relevant. Have like two, three or four talks that you're, you know, willing to give, and basically just propose these same three or four talks to all the potentially relevant conferences. And don't worry about conflicting dates, because until you've been accepted, that's not a problem. And there's a good chance you won't be. And basically don't give up, you know, persevere. Also, you know, you can do meetups in the interim, like get your name out, do meetups, do podcasts. I can tell you that we are always looking for people to speak on JavaScript Jabber, and I assume it's the same for you. You can also even check some of the conferences, even, you know, post their selection committees. So if you really want to get pushy, you can try to hook up with one of the you know, with one of these people, or at least with somebody who, you know, has spoken in a conference like that before.
Didn't help me this time. Like, I know, I think maybe three or four people on the panel.
It happened. Like I said, and it you know, and I won't tell you not to take rejections to heart, because you always do, but persevere. I mean, you get rejected a lot more than you get accepted. That's just the fact of life. More people want to talk or speak at conferences than there are speaking slots to give.
But don't you feel like there's the same kind of posse that goes around and gives talks, and there is less opportunity for speakers that want to like be up and coming?
Yes. It's true. You need to take into account that there are certain people who make their living off of speaking at conferences. And by the way, it's not an easy life. You know, they literally like are always on the road. I mean, if you think about it, if you're giving something like 30 something talks a year, that's like what, three times a month. You're hardly at home. Look, at the end of the day, like, the conferences want to get people who will draw, you know,
a crowd,
exactly. And, and it does play into the game. It's just the way it is. There are even certain conferences who from the get-go just, you know, select their speakers and don't even have an open CFP. It's just the way that it is. You know, I know some speakers who won't even come to a particular conference unless they can schedule some sort of training before or after to make it worth their while financially, because basically that's their job. You know, lucky us, we can go and speak at conferences, and we have an employer who will cover our expenses if the conference doesn't.
But well, like speak I for said, yourself. You know, I don't know. My employer says only if you get the organizer to invite you and they pay all expenses, then you can go.
Yeah. Well, look, at the end of the day, it's a legitimate decision on the part of your employer. You know, for example, I know certain employers who might say, you know, we are interested in pushing our brand in, let's say, Europe and the US, so we'll cover expenses there, but we won't cover your expense if you decide to speak in India or Australia or something like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's their money.
And it's a lot of money to spend.
I remember when we talked to Tanner, he was like, I don't go to any conference unless they pay for me and my family to come over and pay the whole lot. And he doesn't submit any CFPs either. He just gets invited.
like you said. Yeah, and by the way, that's another way to get into conferences. If you're really involved in open source, and you make your name in the open source community, you know, obviously you might pick a tool that nobody cares about, or fails or whatever, and those things happen as well. But if you're active in the open source community, there's a good chance that you'll get your name out, and people will want to listen to what you say. And like I said at the beginning, if conferences are not happening, well, you can always compensate by meetups. And by the way, meetups do have a big advantage in that they you're connecting with your local crowd, which might actually be more significant when the next time you're looking for a job, unless maybe you're planning to move or something, then actually getting your name out in your local community might be more, let's call it, cost effective or beneficial or whatever. So yeah, that's also a thing to do, I think.
How about the talk itself? I mean, have you found, like you said earlier, that with time you learn sort of what conference organizers want? Like, is it about the title? Is it about like the subject more? Have you found any like heuristics for, you know, how to structure your submission in a way that's better?
That's really hard to say, because I've heard wildly different opinions from different people, including people who are part of selection committees for conferences. So some would say just do the one paragraph, while another might say do two or three paragraphs. And it's really challenging. Look, at the end of the day, though, it's a bit clickbaity. There's no getting around it. You know, think about, you know, yourself looking at the agenda or the schedule for a conference, and thinking about, let's say you're at a multi-track conference and you need to choose which talk to go to. Think about, you know, what drives you to pick one talk over the other, putting aside the name of the speaker, just going by topic and description and whatnot. And it's essentially that, or think about like the a byline in a news article, or the title of an article or video.
What draws
you to click on a particular video and on YouTube and not another one, even though they're effectively about the same topic? It's kind of like that.
It's the hook. Have to have a hook, right?
If the title of the talk says that something popular is dead, I'm definitely picking that one.
Right. It's like David Kershen's Goodbye Use Effect. That's a great title.
An amazing title.
Exactly. Yeah. Just make sure, though, that you have actually something to say on that topic. You know, it'd be kind of sad if you have this really catchy topic and then you can't actually follow up with the actual content of the talk. By the way, I have to give props to the Reversim conference. By the way, I highly recommend submitting to Reversim. One of the benefits of it is that they really will prepare you for this whole thing in general. So a lot of these conferences, you know, you get accepted, it's up to you. They just want to make sure that you get there on time. They don't really review your slides, they don't review your talk, nothing. Reversim actually takes a really proactive approach where you actually do a dry run in front of their acceptance committee and the other speakers in the same track. And you get a ton of constructive feedback. And I can tell you that, for example, my last presentation that I gave at Reversim, I literally redid the entire talk after I did the dry run because I got so much excellent feedback. So if you really want to get into this sort of the groove of how to, you know, do the title, the submission, but also the talk itself, the slides, how to present your stuff, I highly recommend Reversim if you can get into it.
Yeah,
have you heard? Have you heard? Have you heard? people calling reversing the midburn of the high-tech industry.
The Israeli high-tech industry, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, I have to say. The Israeli high-tech industry is really vibrant. I mean, you know, you see larger conferences just catering to the Israeli crowd than really a lot of the international conferences. By the way, I'm old enough to remember the tech ed conferences that Microsoft used to throw back in the late 90s, early 2000s in Israel, where effectively the entire Israeli tech community would attend the Microsoft wow. conference. Yeah.
But the question is, did you have Steve Ballmer jump up and down?
I think he actually came once or twice. Oh. Because it was so big. I mean, you had a conference like with 10,000 people. You know, they were huge. You know, before the web, you know, we don't remember those days. I mean, who develops for Windows as a front end anymore? But yeah. Back in the day, you know, Microsoft ruled the tech industry in Israel. Everybody was a Windows developer back in the day.
I don't think it's only in Israel. It's probably worldwide, right?
Yeah, but I think it was especially big in Israel. Israel used to kind of had this tendency of selecting and everybody using the same tech stack, at least mm-hmm. back in the day. I assume it's not exactly the case anymore, but it definitely used to be the case.
Nowadays, it's probably the same, right? Everybody's using React.
That's because everybody in the world is kind of using React. I think Israel was a Microsoft site much more so than many other places in the world. I also think it had to do with the fact that at that time, I think Microsoft had like a good deals with the army. So everybody mm-hmm. who started developing in the army got their exposure. Initial exposure to a Microsoft stack, so they like brought it with them to whatever, you know, wherever yeah. they ended up in. Anyway,
You see .NET on every like Israeli program.
Exactly. But if, for example, we look at the React Next conference, which we mentioned before, I think they have like what 700 attendees. That's that's
more.
Pretty big.
It's 1,000.
That's pretty huge. Mm-hmm. Even, if I'm thinking about like international conferences, they're often not as big as that. So kudos to us.
Yeah, and kudos to Nourli. Yeah, Nourli Helvel, which has been putting it up for the past, 4 or 5 years, is it?
Yeah, for sure. That's pretty amazing. You know, like I said, I've never been on the organizing side of things, and I know it's like really hard and lots of work.
No doubt.
All right, so let's dive into the real ugly stuff.
Technology.
What meta framework is going to win? Let me present the option.
Hey, wait. You said don't talk about X named framework anymore.
Don't worry, I got you. Okay, so we have Remix, we have Next 13 talking about app folder Next 13, let's call it. We got Solid Start, we got
SvelteKit.
We got Quick City.
Quick City, yeah, they go hand in hand.
We're talking about meta frameworks here.
We've got Astro.
Okay. I'm willing to accept that to the list, although I think
Nuxt. What about the Vue community, man?
I don't think Nuxt is a contender anymore. I'm sorry, it's not a contender anymore. I mean, maybe previously.
You're gonna get it out of hate.
You might not consider them a contender. But, cards on the table, they've got way more users currently than Solid Start, Quick, Svelte, put together. Mm-hmm. There's the excellent Google driven website, the Chrome user experience report, the Crux website, where you can actually see the graphs of the performance.
I just got one remark. That's probably like Dan's homepage. Whenever he opens up like Google Chrome, it's Crux out of his eyes.
It's not anymore. It used to be when I worked at Wix.
Not anymore.
But not anymore. You know, the problem with them is it only gets updated like once a month, really. So after you've seen it, you're good to go for that month. I did give a talk based on this website, a lot of the data from there. So obviously when I built that talk, I dug it in a lot. But what I was saying is you can see there the graphs of the performance of the various frameworks, but also the amount of usage of the various frameworks. Now it's somewhat skewed because they only count sessions on Chrome and only for websites that have over a certain amount of traffic, which they don't say exactly what it is. So it's not a perfect representation of the web, but it's pretty good. I think they have something like 10 million websites in there. So it's pretty representative. And, you know, Vue is way ahead of some of the other frameworks that you've mentioned. And it's not surprising. I mean, Vue has been around for years
is meta frameworks, right? That's what Rome.
No, but not also kind of let's define what it means to win. I just listened to a video from Theo. What's his name? Theo, what's his last name? I forget.
I also always forget his last name. I know it's like 3GG, whatever, yeah, but I assume that's not his last actual last
I
name.
I call him Theo T3.
Yeah, Theo so T3.
He
CEO, right.
Yeah. So he had a great video about what it would mean to kill
React. Yeah.
You see that one? So basically he said like React, like jQuery, right, or whatever, like fucking MooTools, is never going to die in the sense that, like, it's not going to be used, right? To kill React, right, means to be able to shift, you know, our interest, our, like, mind space, our focus, you know, from it to other tools. So when I mean win, currently, as I see it, in terms of like, again, going with this definition of win, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I see it, Next.js has won or is the current like winner, right? And I think that the contenders for that, you know, for the podium or sort of breathing at their neck, let's say, is like basically Remix, SvelteKit, Solid Start, Quick City. I think I'm willing to consider Astro, but I think it's a bit of like different paradigm.
Why is it a different paradigm? It's also a meta framework, right?
Right, but I think there's something shared, you know, between these frameworks with all like server actions, and this they're coupled to like a specific framework where Astro isn't. So we can talk about Astro, but I don't think it's the same contender, you know, as, you know, Remix, SvelteKit, Solid Start.
I disagree with that. I think it is like another contender because in the end of the day, right, you're one developer or you're a team of developers. You're going to choose one tool to work with, right? So
I want to pull us for a minute to numbers because, you know, working on performance, I'm really data-driven and number-driven. So I mentioned the Crux website before, the Core Web Vitals Technology Report website. And let's get some numbers about usage just for a minute. Mm-hmm. So out of those, something like 10 million websites that are in that database, React is 900,000, which is more than I expected, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Vue is 330,000. So it's like a third of React, more or less. Preact is doing surprisingly well. It's 270,000. Again, more than I would have expected.
Wow.
Wow.
It seems like they made a jump. Angular is 78,000. Svelte is 14,000. And when you start going to solid, I don't think is actually recognized, unfortunately. I've spoken to it about it with Ryan, but I don't know why they've not moved it. So they're not being recognized yet. And Quick is just too new, to be fair, to really have a significant impact in terms of numbers. So yeah, by the way, and to put things in proportion, WordPress, 3.4 million.
Wow.
So WordPress is more than all the frameworks combined, like more, it's like three times all the frameworks combined. So putting things in proportion. Now, obviously, a lot of these WordPress websites are just websites that have been built years ago, and you know they just right. keep on ticking.
So wait a minute. Just so I have a tally in my head, we got up to about 5 million. Am I right?
There are a lot of websites that are built with whatever.
Right.
I checked what WordPress is by far the leading technology, a specific technology that's being used, but mm-hmm. there are a lot of other tools as well. You know, first of all, there are just, people build sites on Ruby on Rails, just straight on PHP, whatever. There are a lot of websites out there.
But I just think usage is not is not the question I'm really interested in. I'm more interested in what we feel is, a contender to win our minds and hearts, not usage. Obviously, that's a different game. I'm talking about minds and hearts here.
I don't really like the term win like you have. By the way, interestingly, Toby Lotke, the CEO of Shopify, mm-hmm. and as you may recall, Shopify actually bought Remix.
Yep.
So Remix now they acquired the company. Now, Remix obviously is open source, but they acquired the company that develops Remix, so it does most of the open source work there. And he said
mention Gatsby and the fact that Netlify just bought Gatsby.
Netlify acquiring them. Yeah.
Yeah, and also 11. I think they also bought 11T.
Yeah, they did.
And by the way, Ryan, working on Solid, is actually a Netlify employee, so they effectively subsidize the work on Solid. And there's Marco that's being worked on in the context of eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so many frameworks.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Toby tweeted I think that Remix is going to win, and I, who am I to Toby? But I had to respond what does win even mean? Does it mean that we'll stop using other frameworks? I mean,
absolutely not.
You know, I'll give you another number. jQuery. Yeah. Do you know how many websites use jQuery out of those 10 million in the Google database? Guess.
4.5 million.
7.8.
Ah, wow. Oh.
So jQuery has won forever if we're just looking by usage. And jQuery will never go anywhere because nobody is going to go through 10 million websites to rip jQuery out.
Of course.
The only maybe consideration that might be interesting in the context of winning is which framework should I invest in to get the biggest chance of getting hired, employed? I don't know.
I'm talking about something way more hand wavy. I'm talking about winning. Let me ask you this. Has TypeScript won?
Yes.
Absolutely, right? And it's not a usage thing. It's not a usage thing. It's a mind share. It's a focused thing. You know, it has React won? Yes, React is the current winner. Right?
Not to the same extent that TypeScript won, by the way. I think TypeScript won in the sense that even when you're not using TypeScript, you're using TypeScript. Theo, by the way, who we mentioned, did a great video about it. He basically said that you shouldn't learn TypeScript. Rather, you should learn JavaScript in a TypeScript-driven environment. So all the libraries and APIs that you're using have their TypeScript interfaces specified for them. So you get excellent support and completion in your development environment. But you yourself, your own code, you know, you can just write straight on JavaScript without specifying all the types in your code. You'll get some type inference, and you'll get the type information for all the APIs that you're using. So even when you're not using TypeScript, you're using TypeScript, because all our dev tools and all the libraries that we use and all the frameworks have TypeScript bindings. That's not the case for React. I mean, if you're using Svelte, you're not using React.
Right, but if there's a podium, let's say there's a podium of JavaScript frameworks.
Well, there is one, right?
There is one.
The best one there is right now, I think.
Not talking about usage.
JS survey. I'm talking about where they kind of go, and Sasha Grafe has been doing really good work there, right? He's been checking it not by only usage, right? By interest.
Yeah, he called it retention, I think, is the term that they used.
They use, I think, retention. They talk about, like, would you use it again? Would you not use it again? Would you want to learn it if you don't know about it? Right? And then he kind of averages it out. And that, I think, is as close to kind of unbiased that it could be. But then again.
Give me your podium, Yoav. Your personal podium.
That's not a fair question. He'll get fired.
No, but you.
No.
Give me an honest answer here. Not talking about your personal in terms of what you like. I'm talking about how you perceive the JavaScript ecosystem, you know?
Well, it's a hard one. I think, right, that Next is going to stay on top for a while, right? For the next like 3 to 5 years, I think, just because it had such a big market share and the Vercel team has been doing really, really great work, not only around Next itself, but the ecosystem around Next, right? So with Vercel and how easy it is to deploy and the integrations.
So if that's my opinion. Before you go on with your other picks, I want to say something about Next.js. Mm-hmm. First of all, what some people might have missed is that effectively the React team have kind of said that
we Next work JS, for Vercel now.
Exactly. Yeah. Something along these lines. Next.js is the future of React.
Yep.
Is what they've effectively said. And then one of the main core team members moved over from Meta to Vercel. I forget his name.
Andrew Clark.
Andrew Clark.
Yeah. That's it. And they really got Ryan Florence from Remix upset. Luckily for Remix, they immediately announced that they were purchased by Shopify, which basically saved them. Because otherwise, with all due respect to some of the amazing things that they've done and innovated, you know, they wouldn't have had a future in the React space, because they don't offer. It's not like Astro. They're not like a completely different take. Like, they have their own opinions. They do things differently. They've influenced a lot of other frameworks with the way in which they do their progressive enhancement. But they were not distinct enough, I think, to have survived in the long run, if not for Shopify. Now that Shopify has purchased them, I think their success, I wouldn't say assured, but, you know, much improved, because Shopify can really push it to merchants building on their platform, like, you know, give people like certifications and incentives to build things with Hydrogen, aka Remix.
But they effectively killed Hydrogen for Remix, right? Because now,
well, I wouldn't say that. They just re-architected it, you know, to be.
No, I would say that.
They fused it together. They just fused it together.
Look, it's a wrapper.
It's a wrapper. It's just a different thing, you know.
There's an interesting question of why they've even, you know, bothered with this whole thing. I mean, why not just create a whole bunch of components and interfaces that you could use, let's say, from Next.js? And you can. So I assume, you know, a company like that don't want to have like their future dependent on Vercel or something. Anyway.
So back to my picks.
Yeah, go.
But Dan,
Hold on. Yeah,
all right. On. Okay. So you finished. I was just going to ask if you agree that like Next.js is currently on top of the podium.
Let's put it this way: you don't get fired for choosing Next.js. If you're going to make a meta framework or rendering framework, call it what you will, choice, Next.js is certainly the safe choice to make. I'm not saying it's the best choice to make. I'm saying it's the safe choice to make.
It's the top dog.
Because it's the leader of the pack. If your project doesn't meet its expectations because of some technical limitations, let's say having to do with performance, and we can get to performance in a minute, you can always say, well, you know, I picked Next.js. That's what everybody's picking. What do you want? Like I said, that is definitely the same choice to make, and not a choice that will get you fired, even if it doesn't pan out.
I completely agree.
I think the discussion about second place and third place is more interesting. So
Before we go there, though, I do want to make an interesting point. What are the motivations? Like, why do we have these meta frameworks to begin with? I mean, why do we need Next.js when we have React? Why do we need Nuxt when we have Vue? What are the things that the meta frameworks actually give us as framework users?
They give us like the tooling that we need to kind of get our stuff out there, right? So usually a meta framework holds the routing. It's in charge of the bundling. It's in charge of the tooling around transpiling and dealing with CSS and whatnot. Again, it depends on which framework we're talking about. But why is it separated? Also a good question.
No, but forget separation. I mean, I think it's separated mostly for historical reasons. Like, you had Angular as a really opinionated framework, and for this reason, you kind of don't have a meta framework for Angular because there was no need. Angular basically had everything that you needed. You got the meta frameworks because along came React, which originally said, we're not a framework, we're just a Vue library.
Which is a lie nowadays, right?
Yeah, it's a lie, but it was certainly closer to that than anybody else. Look, if you want to go there, I could contend that all of React to an extent is a lie.
In interview questions, if you would have said React is a framework and not a library, you'd have not passed that interview.
Yeah, but I would even say that the whole concept of React, to an extent, is a bit of a lie. Well, we're really like drifting to all over the place. But look, React was created on some really great, simple concepts. So there was this whole concept of UI as a collection of composable functions, which I think is an amazing idea. And if I love React for one thing, that's the thing I love React for, is the fact that, you know, components are functions. You compose these these functions work like application state in, UI state out, and you create your UI by composing these functions as components together. And the other great thing is that from the user perspective, everything is immutable. You never mutate your UI when you're working in React. It's the framework itself, the React code itself, that does all the ugly mutations behind the scenes. So
yeah, that's covering up the magic with kind of,
yeah,
it's saying it's immutable, but like you're saying, it's mutable in the end, right? Under the hood.
But it's amazingly powerful magic, because it makes it possible for you to use a front-end framework in like the same type of simple approach that in the old days we used to build multi-page applications with, like the server side, that you you generated the entire page and you don't need to care about what the page looked, you know, what the previous page looked like. And it was up to the browser to do all the heavy lifting of transitioning from the previous page to the next page. And it's kind of the same thing with React. You always effectively like render the UI for what you want, and it's up to React to do it, to transition efficiently from the current UI to the UI that you want. So you don't need to think about, hey, I need to mutate this bit here and that bit there. And I think that's an amazingly attractive and powerful model. Mm-hmm. The problem is that that model has turned out to be effectively too naive when it, you try to like implement it in the real world, which is why we then had to deal with things like locals. Like in an ideal world, you would have the entire application state in something, and then you would hand it all over, like everything to React, and React would effectively rebuild the entire VDOM and then reconcile that. And that would be such an easy API, are effectively hardly any hooks. Like today we have like, what, 20 different hooks, built like built-in hooks. You know, like you could probably make do ideally with one, like use effect and maybe that's it. Because what can you do? You still might have side effects. But we're not there. And the reason that we're not there is that it can't work in the real world. Because you can't, even with the reconciliation that's built into React, you cannot run the entire VDOM generation code in a reasonable amount of time for reasonably complex user interfaces. So you get the local state and you get the memoizations and the dependency arrays and the whatnots and all these complex interfaces just to effectively reduce the amount of re-renders that you perform. And so you've got this amazingly beautiful concept, but the reality is not it. So yeah,
but I don't think that's why we got Meta Frameworks. I think
that's not what we got Meta Frameworks. For Meta Frameworks, I totally agree with what Yoav said initially. I think the key driver for Meta Frameworks to begin with, look, if it was just a bundling, we would have been able to do with the Webpack or these days with Vite. What we really needed that drove Meta Frameworks is server-side rendering or and static site generation. The fact that if you, like in the old days of the frameworks, everything was like client-side rendered. And it was kind of okay when you were just running on desktops. But once the, you know, once the mobile web happened, and think about it, like React came out like 2013, 14. That's kind of like when everybody was moving from desktops to the mobile web. And in the mobile web, client-side rendering just
sucks.
Doesn't fly. It sucks. Like you said, it sucks. The performance is horrendous. Just think about it. How long before you actually see the content of the site? So if you build it, like if it's a WordPress site and it's built with PHP, then and maybe you can even cache that the generated HTML. As the HTML starts coming down, while it's still streaming, you don't even need to wait for the entire HTML to arrive. It already sees the image tags. It can start downloading the images. By the time the HTML and CSS arrives, it probably maybe even finished downloading the images, and it can display everything really quickly. With client-side rendering, you first download like an empty HTML that downloads some lots and lots of JavaScript,
which then do a lot of Ajax requests to get the actual data. Then they construct the DOM, and only then does the browser actually see the image tags and start downloading the images. So it's like, you can't get good performance, and even on desktop, it's not great, but you can kind of live with it. On mobile, it was horrendous.
But I gotta disagree with you here. I don't think that's what drove MetaFrameworks, because we were all building pure SPAs with React in like 2017, 2018.
And they sucked.
And they sucked, absolutely. But we didn't think we needed a meta framework from my perspective.
But we realized...
Let me ask you this. Wait. Let me ask Roman something. Have you ever tried to implement server-side rendering with Webpack pre-5
for React? I haven't, but I'm just saying that most people like
that. But that is exactly why we need meta frameworks.
Forget about why we need what the reason meta frameworks happened. You know, the reason that we're in a situation now where it's like the norm. And let's be honest, it's still not the norm. When I pitched Remix in the company that I worked for, you know, in September, they were looking at me like, why? Like, we know how to do like fucking create React app. Like, we don't like, let's well, do.
I don't know what your use case is. I mean, look, first of all, even with SSR, it's still an SPA. From my perspective, it's an SPA when routing is client side.
Mm-hmm.
So the initial view can be SSR'd. But if the second page is you get to it via client-side navigation, then it's an SPA.
I'm just saying that if you look at, like, you know, in like Twitter world, right? So meta frameworks have become a must, a norm, right?
Yeah.
But so in the real world, we're not there yet.
But because it Like we said at the beginning, it takes time. The majority of the web is still using jQuery. It takes time. Going from a pure Create React app to a Next.js app, even though it's React, is a rewrite. And rewrites are hard to do, and you don't do them unless you have really strong incentive. But when a rewrite will need to happen, or alternatively, that product dies and a new product is created, then there's a good chance these days that the meta framework will be used. So look, the initial meta frameworks came along with like the Jamstack wave. By the way, that's an interesting phenomenon, how everybody was using that term Jamstack, and then it just died. I mean, who says the Jamstack anymore?
I don't know. Well, Netlify kind of coined it, no?
Yeah, they did.
The idea of like static site generation died, essentially.
But again, all of these are marketing terms, right? This is like the real magic behind all of meta frameworks and everything, right?
So basically the initial incentive, I think, was SSR and SSG, server-side rendering and static site generation. Some pick this, some pick that, some pick both. I think Next.js was the first one that did both. I might be mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started pushing all the other things, because like bundling. Well, SSR means that you need to bundle for the client, and you need to bundle the same code differently for the server. And you need to bundle it in one way for development and another way for production. So you need something like at least 4 types of bundles of the exact same code. And that's something that's kind of difficult to configure manually on top of Webpack. So you got that out of the meta frameworks. And all the meta frameworks, a lot of them were created by companies or promoted by companies like Vercel or like Netlify. So, you know, they had to do deployments at the very least into these platforms. So a lot of the meta frameworks also give you deployment options. Those are the things that you get out of meta frameworks these days, effectively. So it's like we said, it's the SSR SSG, It's the bundling, it's the deployment, it's the routing, because, you know, again, I assume it's kind of a pushback against Angular. Initially, the regular frameworks just didn't provide built-in routing solutions. So, you know, and people, for some reason, like file-based routing. And
why not?
Yeah.
That's how it works. I don't know.
No, but hold on. Do you agree that Meta frameworks blew up in the last 2 years?
Oh, for sure.
I'm asking, what do you think the catalyst is for that? Why did Meta frameworks blew up 2 years ago, or in the last 2 years or so? Right? It wasn't SSR. Right?
I actually think it might have been.
I'll give one reason. COVID. COVID. People had time during COVID, so they wrote another Meta framework. No, I joke. Yeah. Go ahead. No,
by the way, it could be. I don't know. Look, I didn't do an analysis, so I can only make conjecture. So actually, who knows? It might be COVID that people had time to both develop Meta frameworks and also to investigate them. I also think it had to do a lot with. I do actually think it had to do a lot with SSR and SSG, because more or less at that time, Google came out with Core Web Vitals and also said that Core Web Vitals were going to be a ranking factor. So all of a sudden, a lot of marketing people and managers and whatnot were pushing on the developers to get good Core Web Vitals scores. And you can't get good Core Web Vitals scores without SSR or SSG. If you're using a framework,
you couldn't even get good Core Web Vitals with what Google tried to push down developers' throat, which is the AMP project, which was a shit show. I don't know
I'm not going to go there. I was lucky enough to more or less ignore it the whole way. So I've
lucky
not,
you.
Yeah. Anyway, so developers were being pushed on to provide good Core Web Vitals. And the only way to really achieve that was to either do SSG or SSR. And also, like I said, companies like Vercel and Netlify came along, who basically said, look, if you're going to be using the Meta framework d'Azure that we are currently promoting, your life is going to be really easy when it comes time to actually deploy your web application out there. You want to deploy, you just click a button and boom, it's out there, it's working, you can start using it. So like the tooling all kind of came together really nicely at a certain point in time. And by the way, Ryan Corniato, who we mentioned, kind of made an interesting point that while a framework can be a labor of love of one or a few open source developers, he thinks that for a Meta framework, you really need the backing of a funded company, that it's not really something that you can pull off on your own, because like too many deployment options and bundling options. He has said that it has become a lot easier than it used to be, thanks to Vite. But that it's still a ton of effort. Now, given that I've never tried to implement a Meta framework myself, I have to take his word for it.
My hypothesis is that it has to do with two things. The initial one is the HTML over the wire movement, right? That was started that came from the Rails world and Hotwire, which sort of showed the world that, you know what, you can build a modern feeling application, but by, you know, routing maybe, you know, with like Ajax and shit and JavaScript, but like keeping all your like business logic on the server. And I think to a large extent that gave birth to Remix, at least conceptually, right? And I think Remix, if you look at it, right, that brought us the model of like, you know, loaders and actions, I think that created a wave. Because if you look at it, Next.js did not have the app directory, right? SvelteKit didn't have server actions. Fresh, very inspired by server actions from Remix. Even if you look now, recently, if you saw React Hook Form just implemented a form component, right? And I think that...
Didn't they go agnostic also?
I don't know, but I know they implemented a form component, which is like very, very inspired by that model. So I think that once the world saw, for me at least, right? I don't care about SSR. The reason I picked Remix is because the development model, right? Is when I saw for the first time, right, that somebody made a decision, right? Where should I load my data, right? And how should I mutate my data? And how should I like route things? How should I, you know, set up the routing in my system? How should I manage my session, right? I think that as a community, when we saw that full picture, it blew up. It blew up. And
I think there's a certain merit to what you said, although I do have to say that I find it kind of amusing that we consider sending HTML over the wire to be so innovative. I mean, isn't that where we kind of started out at? But by the way, I've got to give a shout out to a library / mini framework called HTMX. That kind of, I think, was like the first real innovator on the concept of doing like really dynamic UIs with sending HTML over the wire. But like I said, I do find it kind of amusing that we're kind of circling back to the Rails world and calling it innovation. But look, I do really like a lot of the things that are happening, but I think that the meta framework revolution, maybe not for you, but in general, started before Remix came along. I don't think Remix made that big of a difference in that context. I think it was more like we started seeing SSG and Jamstack. I think really that the Jamstack approach, which basically, you know, people were kind of stuck in this concept of saying, if I really want a dynamic website with interactions that get handled in the client side and highly dynamic content that doesn't refresh the page on every interaction, then I need to do everything client side. And then the Jamstack kind of came along and said, no, that's not the case. You can actually generate the majority of your HTML on the server and then add as needed interactions on the client side, you know, with JavaScript, and do it with the modern frameworks. But if you want to do that, then it's a lot easier if you use this quote unquote meta framework that we're providing you with, you know, like we mentioned Gatsby. And then Next.js, I think, originally came out as sort of an alternative to Gatsby in a sense.
I think they came out about the same time.
The same time, probably, yeah.
Maybe Gatsby.
I think Gatsby was bigger than Next.js at the beginning.
Yeah, for sure. Next.js also didn't have static side, didn't have SSG at the time, only SSR.
I actually not sure. I don't remember what they had first.
SSG is like a way newer thing for Next.js. Right.
So yeah, I started Next.js like way back 2017, early 2017, and it was only server side. Like
you know what? It's like Next.js 9 or something.
From my perspective, SSG is kind of a dead approach, and it's dead because of a caching flag called stale while revalidate, if you're familiar with it. Once you have stale while revalidate, there's literally no point in doing SSG. You're like, well, there is, you know, maybe for security reasons, you only want access to the data at build time rather than at runtime. I don't know, maybe some weird reason like that. But for practical purposes, I think SSG is pretty much dead. There's hardly a point in it. So we were talking about the winners. I don't think Next.js is going to be going anywhere anytime soon because React isn't going anywhere anytime soon. And like we said, effectively, Next.js is the future of React.
Yeah.
I think Remix will hang around because of Shopify, at least for a while, unless Shopify really tanks or something. Because like I said, they're going to really tie to their platform. They're going to have Shopify certified consultants and Shopify certified design shops and whatnot, and they're going to be built on Hydrogen, which will be built on Remix. So I think Remix will hang around, but I don't think it will surpass.
They will be pushing their content with Builder. I had to put that in one time.
potentially, yeah. I think Builder is a great idea in this context. I think that, you know, you really don't want to do a lot of the UI operations manually. But we're kind of digressing. I think Vue, similar to Angular, has a pretty hardcore following, and it's just big enough that it will never go away. By the way, we mentioned that the JS survey, it's interesting to look and see that Angular is really hanging on really nicely. And in fact, in terms of usage percentage, I think it even went up, which is interesting. So it's still fairly low compared to the other in terms of retention, but it's hanging on, and now they're getting signals. So who knows? Maybe we'll see an Angular renaissance.
Where do you see new frameworks such as Qt and Qt City heading and finding your space?
How about you wrap this up without me, because I have to go. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Yeah, well, I'm a talker and a rambler, and you gave me an opportunity to talk and ramble and pontificate. So, you know, who am I to complain?
But Dan, I want to hear the answer for Yoav's question. So wrap it up without me.
Okay. Bye.
All right, Roman. Guys.
Bye-bye.
See you, Roman.
Bye, Roman. Look, I think that Quick has a really interesting thing going for it, that it has something that effectively nobody else has. I mean, you know, technically Marco has resumability as well, but practically, like, I don't really see Marco getting a lot of usage outside of eBay anytime soon. So really, out in the wild, if you're looking for a real alternative to hydration and the cost of hydration, I mean, there are some interesting alternatives coming around, like server components and islands. But at the end of the day, they don't do away with hydration. They try to mitigate it. The only one that literally says, like, you know, you can get by without hydration is, and still get all the, you know, all the benefits or all the niceties of having like a real framework, not like effectively doing static HTML or close to it like Astro kind of does, is Qt and Qt City. Now, how successful, you know, you'll be in promoting it is really difficult for me to say. It's tough.
Let me rephrase the question. Not about promotion, but what do you think the developer community will want in order to kind of adopt something new? What will it take for them to kind of, what is going to break the barrier?
The thing that's going to break the barrier is either getting some really strong backing, kind of like what Remix is getting from Shopify, or like Vercel is effectively bought out of the React core team, or getting being able to cross a certain a threshold or a chasm, you kind of need to get buy-in from a couple of marquee like accounts, installations, whatnot. Mm-hmm. You need to get to the point where I'm not scared that like as a developer in a company, I'm not worried about bringing in quick. And if the project fails for any reason whatsoever, even reasons that have nothing to do with quick, I don't want mm-hmm. to be potentially, you know, be blamed for making this technical choice. And you know, and people will say, oh, that's why we failed. They won't say, oh, we failed because we're not great developers. They'll blame the framework choice. And you need to be able to say, no, there are enough of successful projects being built on Quick. So it's not the framework. It was you. So, it's kind of a chicken and egg problem on the one hand, getting enough, you like need enough of a community buy-in to get the community buy-in, as it were. Yeah. Now the good thing for you is that Mishko is such a high profile person, given everything that, you know, he's done for the community, for Angular, etc., that buys you a lot of exposure. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what I think you need. You need good exposure. It's great, all the technical work that you're doing, all the innovations. I really like the things that you did with the server dollar. I don't know how you call it. What's the term for it?
It's server functions. It's everywhere, right? Every meta frame has it. We said, why not name it the same, right?
But in your case, it's even nicer because you carry the
lexical scope.
The lexical scope, the closure, back kind of back and forth, yeah. at least
Manu coined it as module extraction, like I told you, and you just released a post about it.
Yeah, so I do like the technical things that you're doing and the innovations that are still and that are constantly being pushed out, and being ahead of the curve, as it were.
But that's not what's going to win it, like developers over.
Yeah, I also think you kind of lucked out. Because there's this funny situation with React, and I think we can summarize on that, that there's this funny situation on React where React has been telling the industry, the community for years now, that what we currently have in React is not good enough. And consequently, that they're working on a lot of innovations for addressing the limitations of what we currently have. Also known as, you know, AKA React 18, Next.js 13, and they've been
fiber concurrent mode and et cetera.
Like we need, you know, you want good performance. Oh, you need server components. Okay, I'm buying into that. Where are the server components? Oh, they're not quite ready yet. So it's been like the situation for the last 3 years that React has been telling everybody that what we currently have isn't good enough. That they're coming out with solutions, but then effectively failing to come out with solutions. Mm-hmm. And that created this kind of vacuum that's, you know, if you're, and that's what I think why we're seeing so many frameworks now coming out, because React kind of created this expectation and then failed to fulfill it. And that created an opportunity for a lot of other people to come in with innovations and try to address all these limitations. So it's Quick with the resumability. It's Solid with fine-grained reactivity. It's Svelte with whatever they call, you know, the conglomeration of what they're doing. But
yeah,
they've got a lot of innovations going on in there. So it's really created the situation where people have accepted the fact that React in and of itself may not be enough. But that on the other hand, or that the current version of React, but then not getting the next version of React and just, you know, getting tired of waiting and consequently looking around. Now, if, you know, tomorrow morning React releases server components, and it turns out to be the best thing since sliced bread, and, you know, literally blows everybody out of the water, then, mm-hmm. you know, you may have a problem. But just
based I don't see it happening.
So, yeah. Based on what we're seeing so far, they look really interesting and really potentially useful eventually. But I don't consider them the ultimate game changer, as it, and, you know, they have their shortcomings and limitations. So I do think there's a lot of opportunity for Quick now. Whether, look, if I knew that you were going to succeed for sure, then I'll be on the phone with Steve to see how I can invest in Builder. You know, it's I do think you have a pretty good shot. Let's put it this way. I don't think it's a sure thing, but I think it's not an unsafe bet.
Interesting. Well, Dan, I want to be minded of our time. And since we've been rambling on, maybe we'll call it a day. And
yeah,
leave.
Hopefully, I've had fun. I hope our listeners will as well. And if they want to hear more of my ramblings, like you said, they can catch me almost every week on the JavaScript Jabber podcast. And maybe you'll invite me over again, so they'll be able to listen to me here as well.
Yeah, we'd love to have you over again. And same goes for you guys. If you want another rambler that likes to shout sometimes, have me over again.
For sure. I think I told you that we want to.
Yeah, cool. Let's do it very soon. And thank you again to Roman for being here as always. And we'll catch everybody on the flip side. Thank you so much again, Dan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.